The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome back. And as people are still coming in, this might be a nice time to again take some questions based on what I taught last week or based on your maybe attempting doing the meditation during the week. Anything about the instructions or your experience you'd like to ask? Any challenges in your home practice?
When you're focusing on the body and trying to be still, and you find that your posture isn't as good as you want it, is that okay to move? I mean, I know you're not supposed to scratch an itch or itch a scratch or do that.
Yeah.
But what can you do? What can't you do? What should you do? What shouldn't you do? What's optimal to do? What's not optimal to do?
You're being careful with your language.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. If you can always move, and you know, it's not like. It's not so strict here, but you have that freedom for sure. But one of the principles is that if you want your mind to become quiet, it helps to keep your body still. And the more you move your body, the more that keeps the mind actually kind of going. And so the idea is to move towards a still body. And to do that, it helps to have good posture, because if you're slumped over in a bad way, it's going to start aching and stuff. And so. If you find yourself slumping or leaning or something in the course of the sitting, it's fine, you know, maybe a couple of times to straighten out. But if you start doing it more often than that, then it's probably missing an opportunity to really go deeper with the practice. And there's a couple of opportunities. One is to allow yourself to slump or lean or whatever you're doing and bring mindfulness to that. Because what that's the principle here is we're always bringing mindfulness. We're always curious about what's going on. And if we keep losing our good posture, get curious. So what's this? Not so much like analyze it, but like, what does it feel like? What does it feel like in my body? What's happening here? And that's cultivating mindfulness. You're cultivating the awareness. And sometimes with the posture, you can actually find out if there's any place where you're being pulling or tightening or really loose or collapsing. And then put a lot of attention in there. And sometimes if you do that, sometimes the body by itself will right itself, will come up to kind of a more, find its balance. So that's what I'd recommend is a couple of times you can move, but if it starts being more than that, then spend some time getting to know what it's like to be slumped over, to find out what it's like to have that kind of posture and get a good sense of it. And after you've gotten a good sense of it and really taken it in, registered what it's like, really felt it, then sometimes when you straighten up afterwards, you have a contrast that teaches you more, that highlights more, and it might be easier to stay up straight, to have a good posture then. Yes, we have another mic with it. Right here, behind you.
Oh, thank you. The question of mindfulness, I don't know what you mean.
No, actually these mics are different.
Oh.
Yeah, they're new mics.
The word mindfulness, I don't know exactly what it means. In other words, the question you asked, you know, okay, I'm slumping. So
yeah.
Usually I say, I wonder why I'm slumping. I'm saying, I'm slumping. But then what do you ask yourself after that? I
mean, ask?
I don't know what you mean by my feeling.
Mm-hmm. So maybe I can give you an example that, from many years ago. I was given tickets to the San Francisco Symphony, and I almost never go to the Symphony. It was kind of a treat for me. And so I went, and during the first half of the concert, we were kind of given kind of good seats. They were kind of like maybe kind of side balcony seats, and we could kind of look right down into the orchestra pit. It's got a great view of what was going on there. And it was fascinating to be there, and I missed most of the music for the first half before the intermission, because I was thinking and looking and analyzing and looking at those violins, and are they really going at the same time up and down? And and wondering about the drums, and I was just kind of like, it was such so fascinating. I found my mind thinking a lot about it all, and I wasn't really enjoying the music or taking in the music. So after the intermission, I came back and I closed my eyes. And as I closed my eyes, then I could receive and take in and absorb the music. Then I can let the music kind of impact me. You know, if you have the boombox car go by and you feel the whole body vibrate? So you kind of, in this wonderful symphony music, you kind of let it vibrate through the whole body, kind of just to register. And it's not something you do by analyzing, what note was that? And was that a half note or a full note that just did? you stop thinking in order to really take in the experience of the music, right? So mindfulness practice is a little bit more like that for most people. That it's not analyzing or thinking about. Many people negotiate their way through the world by their thoughts and thinking about things. But thoughts are you use in this practice just enough to get us present, to then, metaphorically at least, close our eyes and like this, the music, really feel that experience, absorb it, register, let it, the fullness of it, that experience, and linger and take it in a quiet, attentive way, with a silent mind. That's one of the foundations of mindfulness. In addition to that, there are sometimes a very simple, very rudimentary, almost like no effort at all, recognition of what you're noticing. So some people use notes, like hearing, like music, hearing. And some people, it's just like the awareness, that acute attentiveness is such that you kind of know that you know. It isn't just like you know, but you're so present for the experience, letting it register, come in, that you know that you're present for it, though even though you're not thinking that out loud. Is this helping at all, that example? So with a slump, you would just kind of, you wouldn't, yeah, I mean, I slumped, that's like just the mind thinking or something, recognizing. But then what is it, let's just feel what it's like. You feel the heaviness, the contraction in the belly and the can't breathe feeling, and just kind of feel, it's kind of a drag. I didn't realize what a drag it is, you know. Come up in my head, right? Oh, it's thinking about the Giants, they're probably playing right now, and why am I here? And, you know, and I don't even notice, you know, what's going on. But if I really feel it, this is like, what a drag to sit this way. This doesn't, like, something doesn't feel quite right because you feel it. Does that make sense? So I hope that makes sense.
Just sometimes on guard, if you feel something, it sort of feels like you're being passive to it instead of, you know,
doing something.
Yes, making it right for you.
Yeah.
You're passive. And I apply
right.
this to every part of your life in the world you exist in.
Oh.
So if something feels something like that, why is it? How can I correct it? What's happened? Or so. It's getting beyond, and I apply it.
I see. So what you said, I want to kind of take it to another point. That's some people, when they listen to teachers like me talk about being mindful, think we're telling you how to be all the time. I mean, it's good to be mindful all the time, but like this, just be quiet, silent mind, just don't think about it, don't analyze it, just feel it and be present for it. It's a great thing to do, but... you're not going to finish your taxes that way. there's a time and place to analyze and think and remember and review what happened, and there's a time and place for that. There's a time and place to figure out how to fix and solve problems. But some people, that's what they're doing. That's all they know what to do in their mind, and they've never had the experience of just being, and just being present. It's like, maybe I used this kind of analogy before. Maybe I should never use an analogy, but maybe you'll forgive me. It's like if you're having a deep kiss with your lover and you're sitting there feeling their lip and say, now should I push a little bit more on my upper lip or lower lip? You know, I wonder how much pressure is needed right here and how much moisture should be right there. And, you know, it's like, you know, you miss something, right? So there's a time for that kind of, you're making bread. Should I have more moisture here? Should I knead the dough harder? You know, what's the right? There's a time for problem solving. But some people are some people are addicted to constantly think about and solve and figure out and make better. And this is why this is a very important in practice, this kind of practice, is that what we're trying to do is to learn how to be present for our life without needing it to change. Sometimes it should change, and we should work on changing it, but there's a difference between changing it when we can and knowing that we don't need to have a change. And because someday it's going to come when you can't change anything. And if you know how to be free, how to be not caught, how to be at peace with difficult, challenging situations, then you come into the new challenging situation and you'll know how to be with it and be at peace. But if it's always about fixing, and only if you fix it and get it better will you be peaceful, then you probably never actually be peaceful. So meditation is like going to the gym, you know, it's like a laboratory or something, where we're approaching our experience in a particular way to learn how to be more mindful, how to learn how to be in the present moment, pay more attention to what's going on in a present moment way, but also learning how to be present for our experience without incessantly being for and against it, without incessantly pushing away, pulling away, attacking it, grabbing on, doing all the stuff with it that we're always doing, and just to be. And so the example of me going to the symphony, you know, it's the second half of the symphony when I closed my eyes and just took it in, I wasn't trying to do anything with the music. I was just there with the music. But it took me, you know, a very expensive ticket, you know, half of an expensive ticket to get that far. And so meditation is the time we're learning. So if there's something uncomfortable while you're meditating, this is actually a very useful place, if you're inclined, to not fix the discomfort, but learn how to be comfortable with discomfort. Learn how not to have the mind caught and involved and reactive to the discomfort. I'm slumping, it's uncomfortable, and I'll have some peace with it. And once I'm peaceful with it, maybe then I'll straighten up. Does that make sense? Is there enough of you? I apologize if it didn't, some of you. Okay, so let's do a meditation. In the course of it, I'll introduce a little bit the beginning of what we're going to do today. And as you prepare yourself, I want to say that you know, there's many ways of talking about mindfulness practice and the practice we do, but it's developing our capacity for paying attention, for being attentive, being aware of what's happening. And one of the advantages of that is you actually start seeing what's happening with greater clarity and become wiser with it because of that. But the other thing that happens is we begin slowly to discover that there's something very precious, very valuable about being aware. Awareness itself is a very important quality of human beings. And often, like if I really want something, I want a glass of water, I'm really focusing on the water, thinking of the water, I want the water, can I get the water? The water's good, I need to drink the water, the water, the water. And so there's an object of my attention. But there has to be attention to pick it up and hold the water. And as the attention, as the awareness gets stronger and stronger, at some point, the very fact that we're aware stands out in highlight as a much bigger deal than the water, than what we know. So the very fact that we know is bigger than the knowing. It's kind of like, some of you here in the Bay Area maybe had the experience of driving around for days, weeks on end, just driving around, just smoggy. And then one day, all the smog is completely clear. And you say, wow, the clarity. And the clarity stands out in the highlight. You don't really noticing, you know, other things are not as important as the clear air. Wow. So the same thing, the mind becomes clear. And so awareness stands out in highlight. And so we're starting to discover something about the nature of awareness itself as we're developing mindfulness. So with that as an introduction, we'll see if this can go in that direction. So gently close your eyes. And give some attention to your posture, maybe sitting up a little bit straighter than you normally would. And without losing some straightness, uprightness, take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And as you exhale, see if you can relax. Relaxing your shoulders, your belly. Soften. And then letting your breathing return to normal. And take a few moments to feel your body. A global awareness of your body. And see if you can set your body at ease. And then bring your attention to your center of your head, kind of the area of your brain behind your forehead, between your ears. And just take a few moments to feel that area of your body, top of your head. If you don't feel much, that's fine. Just kind of keep your attention there and the whole area of the brain. And as you exhale, as if it's a muscle, relax the brain. Open up the space in your head, and then allow yourself to hear the sounds around you. Not to think about them, but almost like they're like music or something. Just take them in. Some of the sounds that come are pretty constant. Some of them are new, like the traffic suddenly comes or sound in the room, and you couldn't plan to hear that sound. It just happened. Independent of what you think or what you want or what you like and not like, there's something about being aware of sounds where awareness is like an open field or an open space within which sounds arise. Arise in consciousness. Sounds exist independent of your preferences, your liking and disliking. They're just there. See if you can find an awareness that's spacious or open or relaxed enough just to be aware of sound. And then keeping your mind relaxed and soft as you can, let go of the sounds, and with the kind of the same relaxed awareness, let your attention enter into your right hand and feel the sensations of your right hand. The palm of your hand, the back of the hand, fingers. And then see if something about the awareness of it, without thinking about it or independent of your thinking and your preferences, what it's like to, for awareness, just take in the experience of the right hand. Very allowing, open. And then next, take in, let go of the hand. And now, into your awareness, let there be the sensations in your body of breathing. Without forcing the attention or trying to make something happen or being for or against anything. Whatever way the body experiences breathing, let yourself feel that, be with it. And if the mind wanders off in thought, let go of your thoughts and open again, begin again with the experience of breathing. See if you can hang in there with the rhythm of breathing, the continuity of breathing in and out, kind of the way you would hang in there and take in music as you listen to it. Open awareness, accepting awareness. Letting the experience of breathing maybe kind of fill awareness. When the mind wanders off in thought, it's okay, you can just recognize that's happening, but put the thoughts aside in favor of feeling the breathing, being with the breath. So now, we're going to do a little experiment with awareness. You have this capacity to be aware, to know what's happening, to let it register, an experience, hopefully in a relaxed way as possible. Not being for or against anything, but just present for it. So now, at this point, see if you can notice how you're feeling. What's the emotion? What emotion is present for you? What's your mood? What's your mental state? How are you? And if you can feel how you are this way, see if you can just let that be. It's completely okay. Just be aware of it. Experiment with having awareness, be open, allowing, just receive it. Whether it's comfortable or uncomfortable, it's fine. Just let it be as it is, but experiment with having the awareness. Just receive it, hold it, be with it in an allowing way. The mind starts thinking. See if you can put your thoughts aside and come back to how you're feeling in an open, simple way. Just let it register what it's like. And it might help if you can identify some place in your body where that somehow is the center, the place of this feeling or emotion or mood. Strongest in the body, and be aware of how it is in your body. And then putting aside however you're feeling for the last few minutes here, return to your breathing and see if you can gently stay with as many breaths in a row as you can without forcing the issue, but without giving up too easily. Just hang in there, letting go of your thoughts so you can be with your breathing. And then to end this sitting, you take a couple of deep breaths. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So the example of me at the symphony, I think, is repeated in different ways by many people, where it's easy to be so involved in our mind, our stories, our imaginations, our planning, problem-solving, our desires, that we miss taking in and registering, really seeing the full picture, really feeling the fullness of the experience. And for some people, it sometimes has to do with their emotional life, their mood, how they feel. And they don't really know because they're so involved in their thoughts and the world, and they negotiate the world through their thoughts. And nothing wrong with thoughts in and of themselves, but sometimes they provide blinders. We don't see everything. Sometimes those blinders of thinking a lot keeps us not connected to our body. You don't know what's really going on. Don't really feel it carefully. I've known people who have had particular chronic illnesses. And they found that by being very careful in their body and learning how to use their body all over again from scratch, that somehow they managed to get through their life in a useful way with their chronic physical condition. But it took a lot of ability to retrain themselves to pay attention in a different way. So there are these different areas of our life. There's our physical life, there's our emotional life, there's our thinking life, cognitive life. And if we focus on one at the exclusion of the other, then we don't have the full picture. And for many people, they're somehow still too focused in their thoughts. Some people are too focused in their emotional life. That's where they're kind of, where the blinders are on. And what we're trying to do with mindfulness is to open up and have a balanced, full view of it all, with an awareness which is not automatically reactive to the experience, but can start calmly being present and seeing it for what it is. So today the topic is mindfulness of emotions and moods, mental states. But I'll say more about that a little bit. But I'd like to hear from you a little bit. In that meditation we did, at some point I asked you to notice what you were feeling, what emotion was present, what mood, what mental state you had, and to notice it and to see if you can experiment with holding it with an allowing awareness there. And I was wondering if some of you have something you'd like to, you would share a little bit of what that was like for you. What you discovered, what you noticed, and what happened as you held it in awareness, as you kind of experimented with this way of being with it.
While meditating,
that's right. Yes. Yes, it's fairly common. Some people are sleep deprived, and so it doesn't take much to fall asleep. But as we get calmer in meditation, sometimes we can get, and people associate meditation with calm. So some people are kind of leaning in the direction of soothing themselves when they meditate. And if you soothe yourself too much and get too calm, yes, you can fall asleep. And I've spent a lot of time sleeping in meditation. Anything about the question? I'm curious about what you're aware of in terms of when you brought your attention to moods or emotions.
So it was kind of interesting. I felt really trapped the whole time, and I think I mostly felt it sort of like in my chest and trying to get enough air. But the whole time I just spent thinking, like, I want to get up, I want to move, I want to like stretch, I want to do something else. Is that common?
It can happen, yeah. It can happen to some people. Especially if you're new to meditation, what happens when we're new to meditation, we stop and pay attention, we start noticing some of the underlying habits of mind and reactions and approaches, attitudes we have about the world. And so some of those things can come to the forefront, especially in a room full of people, the eyes closed, and you know, you're kind of not supposed to be running around or dancing. So it's easy to feel trapped. And if there's a history or habit or something in life experience that lends itself to react that way, it'll come out and show itself here. So for you, you saw that. Were you able to experiment a little bit with holding it in a kind of gentle, open way? In a way that maybe was different than how you normally would react to it?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No.
That's the direction we're trying to go in this kind of practice, is to discover what it's like to have experiences like that, but not to be caught by them or reacting to them or pulled around by them, but just kind of make space for them. So, okay, this is what it's like. Be curious. Oh, it's like this. It's a big training, but that's the direction. Someone else?
Yes, there was something that was very interesting when you switched from how are you, in your guidance to look at how you're feeling in your body and then how you're feeling about your feelings or what kind of feelings you're experiencing. And there was an interesting moment where they kind of crossed over, and I felt that the emotions, as I was kind of being curious and looking at the different emotions that I was feeling, I found more than I thought were there, different layers, that had happened throughout the day, but also that they manifested in different parts of the body.
Great.
Like if I had been angry, I realized, oh yeah, that's in the top of my head. Or if I had felt shame or embarrassed about making a mistake earlier in the day, that was in my cheeks or different places. And it was something I'd never quite noticed before.
So you're sitting here quietly and, you're living your life. If you hadn't come here today, what would you have been doing? You don't have to tell me. You don't have to tell us. I should have known better than asking that. What I was trying to say was that the point I was trying to make was that some people maybe would have watched the baseball game or would have done something, and continued their life as usual. But because you stopped and closed and checked in with yourself, you noticed all these layers of leftover emotions, feelings from the day, and they're still maybe stored in your body in different places. And so that gives you a chance to recognize what's going on for you in a bigger way, in a clearer way. It also makes space for it to process and to empty out and to finish. And many people will carry in their bodies this legacy of the day or the week or a lifetime that never gets a chance to come out and be processed and emptied out. And so this, what you experienced today, was a very good beginning of that kind of process. And yes, emotions are often... generally, we don't know we have an emotion unless it manifests in some kind of physical sensations. So we have different places where different emotions kind of manifest, and that's one of the ways to ground ourselves with emotions, is to feel it in the body. I'll talk more about that. But someone else, about some reports about that meditation.
Yes, I'm a person who uses my body. I use it in athletics. I use it to, some external thing, or sometimes I just use it to go to sleep at night. And I don't really experience my body. And what I found here is that under your instruction, I experienced my left lung. And then I was able to experience my right lung. And when I experienced my right lung, my left lung, in essence, went away.
Uh-huh.
And then I could experience both my lungs. And what that gave rise to within me is it was just a feeling of great pleasure, because I don't experience my body.
Great.
And you helped me, or that practice helped me to look at what was going on inside rather than what I was achieving with my body.
Great. So many people relate to their body as an object to be used. You kept talking about using it. And they're kind of disconnected. It's actually, some people who are very athletic, do a lot of running or dancing or different things. Conventionally, they look like, that person's really into their body. They're connected to the body. They talk about their body. But they're not really connected to their body. It's kind of like using the body as an object. And to some people, this kind of practice, stop and close your eyes and really start feeling, their body becomes alive, becomes three-dimensional in a whole different way. And rather than you being in the control tower, using the body, you become the whole show. And it's a whole different thing when you're no longer cooped up in the control tower. Maybe one more? Yes, please.
I found that the transition from the breath to the emotions was easy. But going from the emotions back to the breath was kind of hard. I got caught in all sorts of stories of emotions, and it was hard to get back to the breath. It's not really, the emotions really sort of captivated my attention, and I started spinning stories around them, and it was hard to get back to the breath.
I see. So in other words, the exercise was try to be present for the emotion in a very simple, allowing way. For you, you opened to the emotions, but it got complicated. You had stories, ideas about them, and you got involved in them, and it reminded you of the events earlier or some first conversation you had or something, and you got involved in this probably story of it all. Is that right? Something like that?
Yeah, just, you know, analyzing them.
Analyzing
so it was hard
them.
To come back to the breath.
Yeah, because you were doing important work.
Yeah.
So, this is a wonderful example of what our minds do. And what we're trying to do in this mindfulness practice is certainly see all that. You saw it, great. It was great to see. And next week we'll talk more about mindfulness of thinking and how to include this as part of the practice. But you saw that, one of the things you saw was you couldn't just be present in an open, allowing, simple way, calm way. You got involved with the emotions. So I'll use you as a, don't take it too personally, but I'll use it as a jumping off point for tell you a story from the time of the Buddha. The Buddha was sitting with his students, and he said to them, if a man is struck by an arrow, an archer comes along and shoots the arrow, would that hurt the man? And they said, the student said, yes, that would hurt to be struck by an arrow. And then he said, and then the archer released a second arrow and struck the man with a second arrow, would that be even more painful? Oh, yes, sir, that'd be even more painful. And so then the Buddha said, more or less he said, in the same way, or similar, the first arrow, in our as we go about our life, the first arrow is what happens to us. The second arrow is how we respond to it. And we're responsible for the second arrow, not the first. Meaning, for example, if I go walking down the sidewalk here, you should be careful by a big redwood tree because it'll be a bump there in the sidewalk. So I'm walking down the sidewalk and I trip in front of all of you. You know, I'm a mindfulness teacher. I'm supposed to be very attentive. And, the first arrow is I tripped. The second arrow is, oh, no, these people are not going to like me. They're not going to think well of me. I'm a bad walker. This is embarrassing. I better walk in private from now on. You know, and my mind spins out. And not only is it second arrow, but third arrow, fourth arrow. And then I get angry with myself. How could I walk so badly? And then I get afraid. And then I could, you know, all kinds of things happen, right? So tripping on a sidewalk is a relatively ordinary thing. That's the first arrow. And there's many things that life will bring you, which is the first arrow, difficulty, challenge that goes along. You can't be a human being without having life bringing you arrows, things that hurt, that are uncomfortable. But the second arrow is what you add to it. And part of the what this mindfulness practice is attempting to do, among many things it does, is to start creating a little bit of gap, space in the mind, that you can see the difference between the first arrow and the second arrow. And then begin putting a question mark after the second arrow. Is this really true? Or take responsibility for it, or if you can, let go of it. Just, it's bad enough for the first arrow. And sometimes the first arrow is not an arrow, but it's a beautiful flower that comes your way, right? Life is not all arrows. Sometimes it's a beautiful flower, but then you create a second arrow around the flower. Like someone comes in here and gives, you know, a number of us flowers, and I pick up my flower, and you know, it's a beautiful flower. It's not as good as his flower. Why was I given the bad flower? The people don't like me. And there's all these arrows they get thrown, right? Even though it was this beautiful thing, pleasant thing to begin with. So to begin seeing how the mind works, and seeing what we add to it that's in addition to the simplicity of the experience, is a part of the door that opens that leads to what in Buddhism is called freedom and liberation. And maybe you can get a sense of that. Be able to, it doesn't mean that you don't trip. It doesn't mean that you don't have unpleasant experiences. Life brings arrows. But you learn to be relaxed. You learn not to add to it. You learn for the heart, the mind, to stay peaceful, calm, even happy and joyful. One of the surprising things for me when I got into this practice seriously, was it's possible to I could experience intense physical pain and be joyful at the same time. Just the fact that it's intensely painful doesn't mean that you have the inner life has to be uncomfortable or angry or upset or frightened. It has to do with the reaction to the experience. And it's possible not to react in any kind of negative way at all. And without the reactivity, negative reactivity, then there's space in the mind for some other way of being. And I found that it's possible sometimes to have a lot of joy in the midst of a lot of pain. And I think that kind of goes against people's usual understanding of how things work. So emotions are a very important part of human life. And some people have very strong opinions about emotions or attitudes or policies around them. Some people feel like every emotion is really important and should be broadcast to everyone else. Some people would rather never experience an emotion. And in fact, maybe they don't, you know, they've managed somehow to not experience them at all. Some people are frightened of the emotions. Some people delve into them. Some people experience the world through the filter of their emotions. Emotions have a big, but one way or the other, emotions are a big part of our life. Without some of the most beautiful and enjoyable parts of human life could be said are part of the emotional feelings that we have in our mind. Joy, love, peace are kind of like emotions as opposed to just thoughts and ideas. And learning how to be mindful of emotions is a very important part of this practice. And as I've said already, that the more you can be mindful of emotions, the more wise attention you can bring to this thinking, the thinking mind. If you try to be aware of the thinking mind without being aware of how thinking is connected to emotions, it's very hard to kind of free yourselves from being entangled in your thoughts. So one of the things that's very important to understand in this mindfulness practice, especially in meditation practice, is that there is no emotion that you're prohibited from having. Should I repeat that? For the purpose of meditation, there's no emotion that's prohibited. This is maybe for some people, the only place in life where it's safe and allowable to let yourself feel and whatever it is you're feeling. And one of the reasons it's safe is like you're basically committed not to move, right? So so you can have murderous rage or just like over-the-top lust for someone. But you're not going to move, right? So you're not going to do anything. You know, you're not going to say anything because you're meditating, and you're not going to do anything. You're not going to grab anyone or punch anyone. So, you know, the last time I wanted to punch someone out in my adult life, well, you got your attention. Is that why you're sitting so far away today? was in the meditation hall in the Zen monastery in Japan. Because the guy who was sitting next to me, the Zen monk next to me, he didn't like me. And he was doing all this stuff. He was poking me and doing stuff. And I just felt like I just wanted to punch this guy out. But, you know, I was supposed to sit still. So I sat there and just let myself just feel the energy and the feelings, the emotions. Okay, very interesting. So some people have all kinds of ideas that certain emotions are not allowable, that you're not supposed to have those emotions. And so they have very negative or reactive or closed down around having certain emotions. And they have a lot of judgments about themselves. I'm a bad person for these emotions, or I'm a saint because I have these emotions. I should be this way, I should be that way. So meditation is the one place where you're allowed to have whatever emotion happens to show up. Isn't that great? It's kind of a relief. So you can have murderous rage, and it's okay. And but be careful with it outside of meditation. Very careful, but in meditation. And so what it allows you to do is to try not to have any second arrows. Try not to judge it. Try not to judge yourself about having it, whatever it might be. Just see if you can just let it be. And like you're listening to the symphony, just listen to it or take it and feel it. And feel what it's like in the body. Try to have a quiet mind that's not thinking or analyzing it. And just feel it and be with it. And see what's going on there. The word emotion in English is very interesting. It comes from the Latin root. And the motion means motion, movement. And the E, the prefix, means out, to move out. And all emotions want to move out. All emotions are processes that want to be moving. and want to move themselves out or resolve themselves in a certain way. And so, but they get stuck. Or we feed them and keep them going. So, resentment is frozen anger. As we begin to allow ourselves to feel the resentment and open to it and just let it be there if it's present in this relaxed, open way, calm way, not that it's easy to do it, but that's the direction we're going, then the frozen part of the resentment begins to fall away, and the anger is there, and the anger can moving and kind of begin resolving itself. It's quite phenomenal to sit quietly with your eyes closed and feel anger arise and move through you and pass away. It won't pass away, however, if you feel the anger, and then it reminds you of why you're angry and what the person said to you and what you should have said and what you're going to say next time and how could they do it. It's not the first time they did it. And, you know, and so your mind goes and you get, you know, more and more angry because you're feeding it with your story. So the idea of meditation is you don't feed anything. You're just aware of it. Present moment awareness. No second arrows, no analysis, no reactivity, no judgments, no story. And that's just, but just feel it, the anger, and chances are it'll resolve. There's a phenomenon, I don't know exactly the figure, but there was a few years ago, researchers came up with this phenomenal idea. Maybe some of your psychologists know the exact number. But they came up with some idea that, you know, they studied human beings and their emotions, and they said that if a human being does not feed their emotion, doesn't get involved and keep fueling it, all that, it's not going to last more than a couple of minutes. That's kind of like ridiculous, right? I mean, they didn't know me, you know, us, you know, because it's like, what, I've been depressed for years, you know, or I've been angry for, you know, resenting that person since I was in high school, you know, and it's still there. And what do you mean? But the point is, yes, these things can stay for a long time, but they stay because we're telling the story, we're feeding them over and over again. And these are kind of like second arrows or more junk food for the emotions that keep going. So in this way, it's very respectful of emotions to just let them be. And let them, as if you don't really know what's supposed to happen, but this emotion, the moving out, your body, your emotions, they know what needs to happen if you get out of the way and just stay very calm, present, and feel them in your body and see what they, how they move through you. See what goes on. Charlie Brown talked about good grief. If the opposite is bad grief, it's frozen grief or a holding. So many emotions can be this way. And so the idea is to kind of just be present for them and allow them to begin moving and seeing how they unfold. So how we do this in mindfulness meditation is that when we do the meditation, the breath is kind of like the center. And we keep coming back to the breath. We cultivate mindfulness, concentration, present moment attention by being with the breath. That's the kind of the priority or the where we try to stay. But sooner or later, some experience is going to happen that's more compelling than the breath. And it could be sounds. And then you can let go of the breath and do listening meditation like we started off today. It could be body sensations. Then you let go of the breath and you bring your attention and cultivate awareness of the body in those areas where those sensations are. If the emotions are strong and compelling enough that it's difficult to stay with the breath, then you can let go of the breathing and then just take in the experience of having this emotion. And the idea of taking it in means this is where we don't think about it so much. We just feel it, allow it to be there. Kind of like you're being with a friend. Maybe he's having a difficult time, and you can't really do anything but just be with them. You know, as soon as you say something to them, you're kind of messing it up. And it's just so meaningful. You're sitting next to them in their grief. You're just sitting there. And that's, you know, you're not trying to do anything. You're not trying to accomplish anything. You're not trying to fix them. You're not trying to run away from them because it's so painful to be next to them. You're just there. So whatever the emotion is that's strong, whether it's pleasant emotion or difficult emotion, the idea is to kind of offer yourself that kind of presence, just to be there with it. And meditation is a great place to experiment of learning how can I be with this? What does it mean to be with this? what's a compassionate way or kind way of being with this that allows it to be there? And it's a training. Remember, it's always an experiment. It's always a training. Training, experimenting doesn't mean that you don't have to be good at it. Trying to be good at it has more arrows. So how can I be with this? How can I feel this emotion so I'm not fueling it? How can I feel it? Just let it be very simple with it. Uncomplicated anger. Just let it be there. Simple anger. I'm furious. Simple fury. Just feel it. And then, so the first thing to do when a compelling emotion arises is to acknowledge it. And acknowledgement is actually a big deal. Sometimes it's obvious, it's easy to acknowledge it. Sometimes it's not easy. But there's something about the acknowledgement that, you know, we say sometimes in English now, I want to name something in the room. Or, you know, and someone names something and there's some tension in the room and say, oh, yes, I'm glad you named it. Now we can deal with it. So it's something about the naming of it, the acknowledging, oh, I'm angry. Oh, I'm sad. Oh, I'm happy. Is very meaningful for the psyche. So the first thing is to acknowledge it. The second thing to do is to allow it to be there. To see if you can find a way where it has permission to be there, as if it's never been in the sun, and finally it gets into the sun, and it gets to be seen and recognized in the light. So allow it to be there. And that takes a while, quite a long time, to learn, how do I just allow it? My upbringing taught me that it's not okay to feel this way. And these Buddhists don't know what they're talking about, allowing the emotion. You know, this is just New Age California. And so there's all this kind of like a push and pull. And so it takes a while to learn just to be simple. Try to be simple. Just this, just this, just this. It's a very powerful thing to do. Because it helps you to become free of your emotions. And you don't underestimate how incredibly much power it gives you over your life if you're free of your emotion. This is not to say emotions are bad, but it's being caught in them, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant, you're not free. So this idea of coming up to allowing an emotion to be there in a very simple way is part of this process of freeing that Buddhism points at. So first to acknowledge, then to allow, and then once it kind of, it doesn't have to be in this order, but then feel it. Feel it in your body. Every emotion has some corollary in the body, some place in the body where it tends to be energized, some part of the body, like the gentleman over here said. So, you know, some people will feel maybe fear in the belly, or anger is fire in the belly, or their chest gets alive, or they feel it in their face, or in their jaw, or all kinds of different places where they feel the emotions. So where do you feel it in the body? And one of the advantages of feeling an emotion in the body, finding where it's rooted or where the center in the body is that the body is not a story. And so it gives you a way to bring your attention to be present for a physical experience without being easily pulled into the world of stories. And emotions are very easy triggers for getting involved in thoughts and stories and memories and plans and all kinds of things. So you feel it in your body. And the fourth thing that can be helpful to do is to in a very relaxed way, a very soft whisper in the mind, to label the emotion. Use a mental note. So if it's happiness, just say happy, happy. When it's sad, sad, sad. And there's something about the power of naming, noting something, that also helps the inner life, the psyche, not be so entangled or caught in it. It gives it a little distance. It's kind of like it loses some of its power over us. You know, in some cultures, you're not supposed to tell people your birth name because then they have power over you. When you have mental notes, very simple acknowledgement, this is what it is. It does something to the alchemy of the mind where we not so likely to identify with it, not so likely to be for and against it. It's kind of like this adult, matter-of-fact thing to do. Oh, it's sadness. Oh, it's happiness. And so we're a little bit kind of pulling out of the glue that keeps us caught in whatever's going on. So these are four steps that are part of the mindfulness of emotions. So you want to stop, acknowledge it, look at it, be with it. See if you can find some modicum of allowing awareness. Just let it be there in a very simple way. And feel it in the body, experience it as a physical thing, and then use a very simple mental note to help you be present, stay there for it. And if emotion stays a long time, you can actually do, you know, long period of time just staying with one emotion. And that's why just gently in a nice rhythm, repeating the mental note, you know, like if you're sad, 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 it helps you kind of stay on track rather than wandering off too easily in thought. Just stay there and feel it and be with it. Any questions about that? Yes, please, if you can use the mic here.
Some emotions are easy to sit with, like happiness, joy. But for example, for me, anxiety is very difficult. But you're saying that during those 15, 20 minutes, it will go away, even if it's unbelievably...
I don't want to promise how long it'll change. You know, it takes a change. But
it's easier to just either think about something else,
yes,
or just to stop meditating because it's so... almost painful.
Right. Yeah, I can understand this. So you might want to do it in very small chunks, do small periods. Get close to it, experiment with it, maybe even just 2 minutes. See if you can get close to it and feel it and not be caught in it and not be pushed around by it. See if you can relax into it for 2 minutes and then pull out. Start thinking or do something else if it's too hard for you. And then maybe next time, 3 minutes. Slowly begin to ride the edge. And rather than thinking that you're trying to get rid of it, maybe it's more important for you to learn how to not be frightened by the anxiety or snowed over, snowed under by this anxiety. And so it's possible to have fear arise, and it's just like clouds in the sky. It's like, oh, there's fear. And you're very relaxed, very open. You feel the fear in your body, but you're not identified with it. You don't have predictions of what it means. You're kind of the story. It's just anxiety in a very simple way. And you realize it's okay. You're not going to die. Nothing dangerous is going to happen. It's just anxiety. It's just fluttering in the stomach or something. But it takes a while to learn that. It takes a while. So, and that's a very powerful thing to learn to do, to learn to be present for fear or anxiety without being under its control. And beginning to find that ability then allows the anxiety to start relax. And that's what the anxiety wants to do. It wants to relax. And this is one of the ways to help it to relax. Does that make sense? And for people with anxiety, strong anxiety, what can be helpful then to help you stay present in this non-reactive way? Sometimes it's helpful to go back to your breathing. Stay with the rhythm of your breathing and breathe through the anxiety. Because sometimes feeling anxiety, only the anxiety, is too much. But if the breathing is kind of like the ballast or the kind of like the support that makes it easier just to feel it without getting pulled into its orbit. Does that make some sense? Great. It's worth doing. It's great. So over here.
So during the first meditation, the emotion was kind of this subtle emotion, which I didn't really have a name for, and I kind of wanted a name for it, kind of like, you know, I was looking for a name, but I couldn't find one. So the best I could do is kind of start saying what it wasn't. It was like, it wasn't sadness, it wasn't remorse, but I was trying to find out what it was. Yeah. I know there's a lot of emotions, and they're not all just happy, sad.
Yeah, of course. So because we're meditating, we don't want to spend a lot of time thinking about things and figuring things out. So if it's not obvious what the emotion is, don't try to name it. Don't try to have a mental note. Or just have something generic like an emotion. You know, I'm feeling something, or just something. Something. And then eventually maybe it clarifies itself, but don't make a big project out of it. Meditation is always about being very simple with what's there. Over here. Oh, she has one, yes. Oh,
I had two thoughts. I had a question first, but the other comments made me think of something else. So,
but one thing I was thinking is that you have an emotion and you're trying to figure out what the emotion is. Sometimes it helps me to figure out where I feel it in my body.
Yes.
Then by identifying where I'm feeling it, then what the emotion is becomes clarity. So it's a switch between naming it and just
feeling it. Yes.
I'd love to talk to you later because I've had plenty of anxiety.
Yeah, hold it closer to you.
Oh, one thing about, is this better?
I think so, unless the battery is low.
No.
Yeah. Is I thought that Gil's comment about anxiety, about sometimes when you feel it, just saying to yourself, oh, here's that weather system coming in. You know, oh, it's that cloudy weather. I know that. Because you know you're not always anxious. So you can tell yourself it's just what's coming in right now. And that somehow takes it out of being all about you and how you feel and pulling you into the emotional part.
Right.
That's just a
very thought. Good. Thank you for both of those. And this thing about feeling your body is so useful. I mean, I had a, remember, it was many years ago now, but I was feeling out of sorts. and so I lay emotionally out of sorts. So I lay down on a couch, and I didn't know how I was feeling exactly. I just felt out of sorts. And so I lay down, so I do this practice, I started paying attention to what was going on for me in the present moment. And the highlight of my experience was that as I was breathing, my chest wouldn't relax all the way in. It was like held out, puffed out a little bit. It was like held. So I just got curious in that and just brought my attention, just felt that chest that wouldn't relax as I breathe out. And I didn't like feel like that was bad or wrong. I just stayed and just curious. Curiosity is like kind of the big part of mindfulness, right? Just curious. Oh, what's this like? And as I started to feel it and feel it better and better, at one moment my mind said, I'm depressed. And as soon as my mind said depressed, the chest relaxed. Somehow seeing it, naming it, acknowledging it, was kind of what freed me a little bit from being so, I don't know, stuck in it. Someone else. Over here, you can pass the blue mic down.
If you feel like pain, how do you, and it gets worse, how do you stay not connected to that? How do you not make it create an emotion of like...
Well, if it does create an emotion, if it, you know, some reactive emotion, then you would let go of the pain and do mindfulness of the emotion.
But it's like physical pain.
So if it's physical pain and it sits there, you have to decide whether it's a useful opportunity to stay and practice and be mindful of it. If you see the opportunity of practicing with it, then maybe you will for a while. And so part of the opportunity is that it's just a good object sometimes for staying in the present moment with, because you're not going to go anywhere else into the past and the future. You're just right there, so you get a sense of that. But more important is that physical pain is often a good place to learn how not to add second arrows to the experience, and learn how to be relaxed and just allow it to be there. As I said earlier, I've had a strong joy with simultaneously with intense pain. So you might want to, one of the opportunities with a strong pain is to start investigating, looking into, just sensing, feeling your way into, what goes on with you when you have strong pain. So, for example, it might be there's fear, and it's not the pain that's difficult; it's the fear around the pain. And so, then you want to kind of say, "Oh, be present for the fear." And if you're present for it, maybe the fear goes away, and then you're back with this pain, and pain becomes simpler. Or it could be that there's strong aversion, just you really feel uncomfortable, you hate it. But the hate is different than the pain. So then you bring your attention to feel the hate, and be mindful of that for a while, and then when that dissipates or gets weaker, then you go back and just feel the pain. And it's possible to learn a lot about your belief, well, not only emotions and reactions, also beliefs. Some people believe that if there's a physical pain, something is wrong. Some people believe there's physical pain, I've done something wrong. If I'm going to be a successful human being, I need to not have pain. I'm supposed to always have joy and happiness and bliss. And I must be spiritually inept because I'm feeling physical pain. And so there's all these beliefs that go on. So the opportunity to stay with pain is we start seeing what goes on behind the curtain. What else is going on? And because if you give, if you just, like if your pain is easy to fix, for whatever reason, then and you fix it easily, then you wouldn't learn much about yourself. So you might feel, oh, this is a great opportunity. I'm going to hang in there until it seems, you know, a little bit too unbearable, too much. I'm going to hang in there longer than I normally would, see if I can learn more about what makes me tick, what makes me operate. Or I'm going to hang in there and see if I can learn how to have this non-reactive, relaxed awareness just holds a pain just in a very simple way. And there's other benefits from pain, but the simple kind of axiom in Buddhism is that if you're free only when you're comfortable, you're not really free. And so to learn how to be free when you're uncomfortable, then you're talking about real freedom. And the day will come when you will be uncomfortable or in pain, and there's nothing anyone is going to be able to do for you. They don't have the medicine for that. But then you know how your mind works. You know how to be present. You know how to be free from all the different things that might arise. And you know how to be with pain because you've hung in there. You've explored and known the territory and been patient with it for a long time. And then when you know, like a meditation where you can get up and leave, of course, because you hung in there with it, when you're feeling pain in meditation, you learn so much about how to be with pain that when you no longer had any choice, you were ready. Yes?
How much is the second arrow really separated from the first? Because in many cases, I mean, the emotion is designed to actually get you to do something, right? You feel pain when you touch the fire. You're supposed to pull your hand away. So how does this attachment vary across different emotions?
I think it can get kind of complicated, but the principle, I think, is what's important because the hand, you pull the hand away from the fire, which is a good kind of pulling back, and, it's appropriate. But then after you've pulled it back, then you say, boy, am I a klutz. Boy, I'm a lousy, I should never have been handed out hands. Because I don't even know how to use it, so we make all these stories. We add the arrow upon arrow, right? So I think that we don't have to parse it down. Sometimes it's a little bit hard at the first arrow level to really sometimes tease everything apart. But as you get, and some people, it isn't like the second arrow. Some people live at the 112th arrow. we add arrow upon arrow upon arrow upon arrow, at some point, we got to stop shooting arrows and just let something be. Just let it be and be with it. So if you can just be at the 112th arrow and just, okay, I'll stop. I'll just be present for that. Just be relaxed and know that. Then I won't add 113th. So it's a mindfulness is a training in beginning to use our capacity to pay attention, to use attention. And it's attention in the present moment. So that's part of the training, is to learn to be in the present moment. And it's hard to do because the mind has such a strong tendency to go off into the past and the future, into fantasy. And then if it is able to stay present, then it has a strong tendency sometimes to get involved in abstract thinking, analysis, figuring out, all that thinking about it. But we learn to be present in a very simple way where awareness can feel and sense and be present for something in a very as simple way as possible. And then we start learning how to be something about how to be present in a way that's free. And that's not having second arrows, that's not caught, that's not reactive to what's there. And it's a slow process, but take your time. And to keep it really simple, you can always just come back to your breathing. You don't have to think about, what should I do now? Gil said all these things. Acknowledge, accept, allow, feel in your body, mental note. Where am I supposed to? It might be too complicated to keep all those things in your mind. Just if as soon as you don't know what to do, just go back to your breathing. And be with your breath. Keep it really simple. Stay with your breath. if you're with your breathing, you're cultivating, developing mindfulness and concentration. And then at some point, as you get calmer and more settled, you'll have the ability to recognize and tease apart these different facets of our life. Emotions are a beautiful part of life. We're not trying to not have emotions, but we're trying to be free in the midst of them. And part of the gift of that is that the beautiful emotions of life, the joy, the peace, the love, and things like that, they tend to flow a lot easier, arise much more easy, if we have this open, relaxed relationship to emotions. So if you learn this well, then you'll find you become much more a sensitive emotional being, and much richer and more valuable and more beautiful emotions will come up for you. Love, joy, delight. The kind of things that really require you to be much more in the present moment, and much less reactive to the experience. As soon as we're reactive and caught in the experience, it's kind of like we don't have space for the good emotions, the joyful emotions, the peaceful emotions, to kind of grow and develop and be there in a nice way. But to be open and sensitive and relaxed and available for the emotion, the whole emotional range, means to be aware of the whole emotional range. And so it means that sometimes you're going to feel fear, and sometimes you're going to feel irritated, and sometimes you're going to feel sad, and it's all going to flow. But as you get more relaxed, you can move between them in a much more fluid, easy way. You don't get frozen around them or stuck about anything. And it's that fluidity which is really the light. So any more questions about the instructions around how to do this meditation practice when emotions become compelling? Seem good enough? So, yes. Maybe we'll do one more and then we'll do a little meditation to end.
Well, what if the emotion that comes up doesn't make sense?
Doesn't have
to
make sense.
For example, I felt sadness and I felt my chest constricted, but then I couldn't find a cause, nothing during the day that could cause the sadness.
Right. Yes. So when we do meditation, we don't have to be concerned with the cause whatsoever. The cause is not really that relevant for doing the meditation practice. And that actually makes things a lot simpler in meditation, because you don't have to think about the cause or you don't have to figure it out. And so it's sometimes actually maybe good that you don't know the cause, because if you knew the cause, then you'd think about what to do about it or something. So in meditation, you don't have to worry about the cause. Just be concerned about being present for it and feel it in your chest, feel the sadness, and look for the opportunity to be present for sadness in a simple, non-reactive way. Just, okay, this is my chance to learn how to be present for sadness without being for and against it, without making a story of it, without trying to get rid of it, trying to fix it. Just kind of open, present awareness for sadness to feel it. And it's very respectful of sadness, because our body and the emotions in our body, they want to move. And we hold them in an open, relaxed way that allows the movement to happen. What happens next? Does that make sense? So I wouldn't worry about a cause. Sometimes it's very important to discover a cause, but that's really a task outside of meditation. Sometimes when people go to therapy, for example, they look and try to understand that. And that's very useful sometimes. But it's also very useful not to also have the ability to not get swept, pulled into the world of cause and who did what and all these things. Keep it really simple in the present. And then as you learn this, this capacity, this ability to learn to be really simple and just present for what is, without cause, thinking of cause, without trying to figure it out, analyze, fix, get rid of, is very important as people get deeper and deeper in meditation. Some of the deeper places of meditation where there's profound levels of peace, stillness, bliss that can arise, these are very much supported by our ability to have that simple kind of awareness, simple, open, relaxed awareness. So as we're learning this capacity in on the kind of this emotional level, It's preparing the ground, for preparing us, training us to have the ability to actually go quite deep, because you know how to leave things alone. You know how to not to stir things up. Okay, so let's do a little meditation. We just have a few minutes. So, sitting upright, alert, relaxed posture, closing your eyes. And then without any further ado, notice how you're feeling. What is the emotional state, mood, mental state you have? Feeling. Could be that you're happy or sad or bored, curious, could be you feel dull, tired. We're energized. So whatever, it might be very subtle how you're feeling, almost, or very clear. Experiment a little bit to see if you can hold how you're feeling with a very simple awareness. Giving it permission to be there. Not thinking about it or being for and against it. And then see if you can feel if there's any place in your body that seems to be the place for that emotion, where it's most evident in your body. Maybe in your, it could be anywhere, face, head, shoulders, chest, belly, hands, feet. And if you have a mental note that names it, gently try to name it. And as you're there with it, notice if it changes in any way. Does it get stronger or weaker? Does it get bigger or smaller, the area sensation? What happens to your feeling, your mood, your emotional state? Sometimes it can be helpful to connect to how you're feeling with your breathing. And just kind of like breathe with or breathe through your emotional state. Maybe it's easy, sometimes it's easier that way to be simple and not stay present without being reactive. in the last couple of minutes to whatever way you're feeling right now. See if you can feel it in such a way that you're not defined by it, that you don't identify with it. It's just a feeling, almost as if it's not yours, just a feeling, just an emotion. Just a cloud, just a wind, just a sound, just an emotion. You can take a few long, deep breaths. Perhaps as you exhale, letting go of whatever you can let go of. And then, when you're ready, you can open your eyes. There is a handout again in a yellow piece of paper that also provides this kind of instructions of emotions and discussion about them and some ways of practicing with it at home. And reading that, maybe reading the handout a few times in the course of the week. It's not so easy to get this kind of stuff. So sometimes, because maybe intellectually it might be easy, but to really get it, sometimes reading something like this over and over again can be helpful. And if you haven't picked it up yet, I have a book on mindfulness practice that we offer for free here. It's about copies of it on the counter as you leave by the door. It's called The Issue at Hand. And there's a whole chapter in there about emotions, mindfulness of emotions. So if you're interested in this topic, you can read that chapter and certainly take a book. And then we also, again, like last time, we have some people here who are in this training program we're doing. So the people in the mentoring program, if you want to stand for a minute, and then if you, the rest of you, if these are all people who've done a lot of meditation and quite competent to answer your questions, so you can talk to them, and if you want to have questions about what we did today or your experience, or about being or IMC or anything that's related, or you can certainly come and talk to me as well. And so thank you very much for tonight.